I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it.
Oh, happy day, citizens of Earth. Welcome to I Like to Movie Movie. My name is Dan Scully.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
And today we're going to talk about the cosmos.
And the universe on the whole. Yes.
No, actually we're lying because that's actually
Steven Richards.
And today is, we're going to start on a somber note. Originally, we wanted to tie, no, actually, I would say A minor, because that's A the minor. Relative minor to yeah. C, and it has more of a melancholic feel to it. So everybody, have an A minor in your head right now. And literally Friday morning, so 3 days before we were recording this, Steven and I were brainstorming to come up with something for our episode. And we were trying to come up with like what's current, you know, what can we talk about that ties into either a movie release or a holiday. And then it hit, oh, it's Black History Month. So first and foremost, happy Black History Month. Read up on your history. Use this opportunity to learn some new things. It wasn't a particularly great movie, but I would recommend going to see Rustin on Netflix because Coleman Domingo is good, and it seems to be a crime that I had never even heard of this Rustin guy before the movie came out. So if you want to maybe pick something new up in your head for Black History Month, that's a suggestion. And so Steven and I immediately went high class, and we were like, let's do the right thing and do the right thing. A quintessential. We've never seen it. A quintessential, just a American film. I mean, it's one of the films that is like an all-time great. It, you know, put Spike Lee into the stratosphere. I believe it's where Rosie Perez came out of, although she was a fly girl at some time, much like a Jennifer Lopez was on In Living Color. Danny Aiello, a whole bunch of it's, you know, and we wanted to do that. And then as almost the minute that we decided, let's do the right thing and do the right thing. An American icon passed. And so we changed the episode to instead be talking about this guy. Of course, you know the news if you listen to the show. We are now in mourning of the newly late, but always great, Carl Weathers.
I feel like I should applaud, but I don't really know how to react. Yeah, it's a very sad. When you texted me that, it was that one of those. This is how I know I'm affected by a celebrity death, is that when I'm like, oh, this is a joke. When I first see it, you know, I'm like, this isn't real. Like the immediate shock sets in, and I'm like, there's no way this is happening. But yeah, Carl Weathers, man, he's gone. He was, and we had just had him in the new Super Bowl ad where Gronk is like about to do the kick of destiny 2 and he pulls up, and I felt bad because the first time I saw that like trailer for the commercial, because that's the world we live in now. I thought it was LeVar Burton for a minute, and I was like,
Oh yeah.
So, but LeVar Burton's still alive and still reading that Rambo.
Hell yeah. We love
Carl Weathers is Burton. Not, you know, hitting below his weight class anymore.
Yeah. Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
This was a big one because, you know, fans of the show know that I'm a huge, huge fan of the Rocky franchise. Yeah. So much so that actually Steven gifted me an Apollo Creed Funko Pop for Christmas this year.
Yeah. I forgot. Wow. That's very fitting actually. Wow.
Yeah. And my love for the,
fault.
What was that?
It wasn't my fault.
No, I don't think it was your fault. Yeah, I think it was just the fault of the fact that he was 76, and anything can happen when you're up in that bracket.
I don't want to try to, you know, figure out what powers I have.
Oh yeah, like Rob Schneider and Surf Ninjas.
Like Rob Schneider and Surf Ninjas. No.
Or Death Note, yes.
No, the kid that could see the future in his Game Genie.
Oh, that was Surf Ninjas. Yeah. Yeah, he could see the future in his game genie. The other guy was suddenly good at karate. And Rob Schneider thought that if he said, what if something happened, it would then go on to happen.
Oh, right, right.
But it was all spurred on. And that one actually wasn't true. The other guys were magic. But he was not magic. And the whole reason was when, what was the guy with the patch? I forget his name.
Eye patch.
But, They had to destroy a house, and he left the oven open and lit a candle.
Yeah.
And then much later in the movie, they're like, they got away. And they're like, I can't believe you took us from our house and all that. And then Rob Schneider goes, yeah, and then, you know, eye patch over here, he left the oven on and lit a flame. I mean, what if the house blows up? And as soon as he says that, the house blows up, and we all laugh because we're nine. And then he thinks that that's his power, even though he really doesn't have a power. And then Tone Loke shows up.
Anyway, Carl Weathers, American icon, also was he was a NFL linebacker for the Oakland Raiders for, yes, I believe, 2 years before deciding he wanted to be an actor. So in the back half of the episode, we're going to be listing our favorite athletes become actors.
See, I came up with my favorite movies with athletes that became actors.
We really got it locked down. I really got to be more specific.
Well, because I gave you two texts, and then I was like actors or movies with the actors, and then you just said, yeah, like, I can work with that.
Okay.
But you know what, though?
Well, you know, we got two different lists attacking you from two, because honestly, if we did athletes into actors, we'd probably have a lot of the same on the list.
Yeah, we'd have the same, but the thing is, I think that these lists actually do work together just fine, but no, what I wanted to say about the Rocky movies is that one of the things that is so awesome about the Rocky movies is the relationship between Rocky and Apollo. And I don't think that relationship was something that was initially intended until they started, you know, sequelizing it. But I think one of the strengths of the series, in the way that it is able to endlessly sequelize, is the strength of the characters. And that all starts with Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
And now that we're actually in the Creed portion of the series, I think that speaks to how iconic the character of Apollo Creed is that decades after he dies on screen in Rocky IV, spoiler alert, he still has enough of a legacy in the American pop cultural mind that you can launch a very successful new series off of, you know, a character that literally spun off from Apollo Creed. It's such a remarkable performance because he's a villain that isn't villainous. And then he becomes, you know, again, a villain that isn't villainous, but like is slowly gaining respect for the Stallion. He always calls him, "Yo, Stallion." Yeah. And then in 3, he has to train Rocky to fight a guy who's almost like a parody of what you would expect an Apollo to be. And together, like, you know, it's Rocky 3 is so phenomenal. And it's just one of those like amazing friendships that I love seeing on screen. And I don't think it would work at all with anybody but Carl Weathers. Like, he's that fucking good.
And you can tell that, like, the on-screen friendship, it was fueled by the off-screen friendship. And that's the relationship actually, that I love to see.
It underwent a similar sort of growth, because apparently when Carl Weathers auditioned, he came in and Stallone was reading scenes across from him. And they were like, oh, you know, someone said something to Carl Weathers. He was like, well, this audition would probably be a lot better if you had me acting across from an actual actor. Because he just thought that Stallone was just like some fucking punk who, you know, just like a stagehand or something, because he just sounds kind of dumb. And so Carl Weathers was talking shit and was like, yeah, put me in the room with an actual actor and I'll probably sound good. And as soon as he threw that attitude, Stallone was like, you, sir, are hired, because that's Apollo right there. And
that's awesome.
He learned that he was the star and the writer of the film. And so it started.
That's kind
with
of funny,
a little
though, bit of friction. Because like a lot of athletes turn actors, like they have a sense of humility about them, especially when it comes to like, you know, breaking into the acting industry. So the fact that Carl Weathers like kind of always had a chip on his shoulder doesn't surprise me, but it does. It is an interesting story for sure.
But I feel like, see, the way I couldn't possibly deliver that story and capture what the tone was, yeah. But I would imagine that the tone was one that, while edgy and, like, he's talking shit, was actually playful, which is what I think is so good about the Apollo character, is that even when he's being a cocky motherfucker, he's doing it because it's fun. And everybody
and it's
still
that a foundation of respect.
Yes, yeah, and it comes from some love, and everybody's made a statement about working with Carl Weathers over the last couple of days, has really echoed each, you know, one another's sentiments that he was just like such a fabulous guy in terms of being engaged, being creative, being just present and supportive in there, and I love hearing that, even if it makes the loss sting that much more.
My favorite, and me and my buddy Dave quote this one particular Carl Weathers line all the time from Arrested Development. If like people start listing things and then we'll like interrupt like, and baby, you got a stew going because
stew going.
The bit would be in Arrested Development that Carl Weathers plays himself, who as an actor has been scheming free food from the craft service tables. It'd be like, now what I like to do is like take a little bag. All right. You pop a little ham bone in there, some veggies, take it home, put in some hot water, and baby, you got a stew going. Every fucking time we see the opportunity, we'll just lay out a, and baby, you got a stew going. Because that's
a stew going.
For someone to come from the sports world, which is, you know, very regimented and not very creative, like, let's be honest, to like be able to do drama and action and now like even comedy so well is such a great feat for a great man.
He's triple threat. That actually, so I read a story just the other day about his cheap character in Arrested Development, because that is such a great thing. No matter what, like, and
yeah,
it's literally anything. Like, Lindsay has a job at a restaurant and he's like, you work here? She's like, yeah. And he's like, do you happen to get a free or discounted shift meal? Just immediately like thinking maybe he can get some of that. Or when Tobias wants acting classes and he's just like, oh, well, you know, I teach acting classes. And he's like, how much are they? And he's like, well, how much do you got? He's like, $2,500. He's like, well, wouldn't you know it? That's exactly what I charge for. He's like that kind of a guy. But so there's a story from, I forget if it's Mitch Hurwitz or Justin Hurwitz. They both worked on Arrested Development, but they talked about when they first approached Carl Weathers about being on the show. And they said, you know, Carl, we would love to have you play yourself on the show. And he was like, yeah, but he's like, I would love to do it because it's a funny show. He's like, but I feel like it's just going to be a lot of Rocky references, which is fine. He's like, but I'm not really that interested in doing it if we're just going to be doing Rocky parody. And, you know, whichever Hurwitz it was like, well, no, I mean, there will be some Rocky references and stuff, but like, we don't want to lean on that. We want to do some comedy with you. And he was like, well, I could be funny. He's like, maybe I could be like real cheap. And they're like, what do you mean? And he's like, maybe I'm just like a real cheap guy on the show. And they're like, you would do that? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. So his whole character on Arrested Development is a Carl Weathers creation that he just threw out there because he's funny and wanted to show that he can be funny. He is one of the most iconic running gags on Arrested Development.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched in a while, but that's always something that I'll remember about Arrested Development. And I love when actors can, like, play a persona of them that, like play around with the idea of, like, the public perception of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And make it into, like, how, like, the most famous one, in my opinion, is, like, Eminem on The Interview when he just casually drops that he's a homosexual. And everyone's like, wait, what the fuck? What the fuck did you just say?
What happened? Yeah, that, I mean, those guys always do it because, like, This Is The End also did that. But, when the news dropped that Carl Weathers had died, I saw more Arrested Development GIFs pop up in social media than Rocky, than Arrested Development was the most, followed by Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore for me was number one.
Happy Gilmore was my introduction to Carl Weathers, and I remember watching the movie and my parents being like, is that Carl Weathers? And I was like, I didn't know who it was. They're like, oh, he used to play football. That's funny. He's doing comedy here. Oh, wow, he's older now, blah, blah, blah. But everybody knows Chubbs. It's all in the hips.
Yeah.
It's all in the – or when he's playing the piano after he's dead And he waves to Happy with both hands. I got my hands back, Happy, but the piano's still playing.
Yeah.
But... And then he sings, we've only just begun. Oh, man. At the end, when he's waving down from heaven next to the alligator that bit his hand off and Abraham Lincoln. anybody who can find himself in a room with an alligator, a wooden hand, and Abe Lincoln, and a camera pointed at him is somebody worth remembering. And I think that probably says it all.
Yeah.
So let's talk about our movie.
Let's both segue at the same time. Ready? One, two, three. So let's talk
so
about
we decided
our movie
to
that
do
we're
the movie
talk
that
about
wanted
today,
to turn him into a leading action man.
Jackson.
Action Jackson. So I had never seen Action Jackson. Action Jackson is directed by Craig R. Baxley. It is a Joel Silver production, and it has every element of a Joel Silver, like, late 80s, early 90s production. Like, every that guy, Mary Ellen Trainer, Robert Davi, Miguel Nunez Jr., fucking Craig T. Nelson's the bad guy, but, like, every that guy shows up in it. And it's a movie that is not necessarily well-loved. Actually, I'm going to pull it up because the Rotten Tomatoes score kind of shocked me. But it's a movie that I had never seen that I think is – I fucking loved it, man.
I had a great time watching it. And I don't know if it's recency bias because Carl Weathers has just died, but I don't care. For face value, I loved it.
I would say by, like, you know, it's not Lethal Weapon, which is, like, you know, a great Joel Silver-style movie that – a Joel Silver-produced movie that – is like one of the template makers. I would say Action Jackson is not making any template, but it is executing the 1980s, 90s action Joel Silver template with a verve and a style that I think very, very well suits Carl Weathers' skill set.
Certainly.
I can see why people probably watched it and, like, didn't take it seriously. And so I agree that the recency bias of his passing and the fact that now that it's an old movie, we can watch it with the level of detachment that such things tend to require.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, I had so much fun watching this. So much so that I put it on while I was working today and I watched it again.
I finished it while I was working today because I started it too late last night and I fell asleep.
Yeah, when you texted me that you were like, oh, the beginning of this is crazy, and it was like 9:30, I was like, oh, Steve's finishing this one tomorrow.
Yep, and you were right. But you know what? Hey, if I've proven anything, and I'll say it again, I always get the movie in before the podcast.
Even if it's under the wire, he gets
even
it
if
in.
It, even if it's, hey, I need 5 more minutes to finish the movie.
Well, I mean, much like Action Jackson, that's why we call you Even Steven, because even if there's no time left, you get it done. Now, so I want you to take a guess right now. Now, this is 1988 is when this came out. So yes. This came out long before Rotten Tomatoes.
I got to be honest with you, Dan. I already have the page up, so it's not going to be a guessing game. I'm sorry.
You son of a bitch.
I wanted to look for myself when you said it was rough. Man, it is rough.
It's rough. So the 19%? Audience score. Audience score is 35, which is really low. The audience tends
ratings
to go high. And then, but here's the other thing too. There's 19% is the critical rating, but there's only 16 reviews.
Yeah.
So that means that, like, there's a few good reviews in there. Most of them are probably more recent ones that are reviewing, like, a DVD release or a streaming release or something like that.
Hang on. The audience reviews have 10,000, and it's still 34.
The audience is kind of dumb, man.
However, this person, AAP, says 5 stars. I agree with them. This is an 80s action cult classic. Ignore these negative reviews and check it out. It should have been a franchise. Carl Weathers is awesome in lead role.
Hell yeah. The top two reviews are very hilarious in the critical reviews. The first one's positive from Joe Layden of the Moving Picture Show, and I agree with what he says. He says, this is slam-bang escapism, rude and rambunctious, impure and simple. As such, it's the best Saturday night movie since Lethal Weapon. And That's spot on to me. Even though I watched it on a Friday night. Now this one from Angel Luis Iñárritu from El País in Spain, which I imagine was translated. This review is a negative one, and it's hilarious. One more example of an insignificant movie made to entertain those who like forceful punches and accurate shootings.
If it's that much of a fucking burn in English, I wonder how fucking devastating it is in Spanish. Oh, yeah.
But I just love it's for people who like forceful punches and accurate shootings.
Yeah.
When I sit down to watch a movie, there's three things I look for. A healthy pair of tits, punches that are forceful, and shootings. I don't need them to be loud or exciting. I need them to be accurate.
Man, they were accurate not accurate shootings in this movie, let me tell you.
No, not at all.
My first note is that the reporter from Die Hard? And then, man, that gun holds a lot of bullets.
Are you talking about the woman who dies at the beginning?
Yeah.
So that's Mary Ellen Trainor, R.I.P., she is a 1980s, 1990s action movie standby. She shows up in everything, typically as the stuffy lady who just can't abide by our wisecracking hero. She's the psychologist that is working on behalf of Riggs in the Lethal Weapon movies. And their relationship in the first movie is her just being like, he's clearly an unstable guy, and him just being like, unstable? What are you talking about? And then, like, By the fourth one, they just have like, not, well, she's not in the fourth one. I think she had passed by then. But by the third one, they just have like an Abbott and Costello-y thing, like, Riggs, I'm your doctor, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, lady. And they just bicker. And yeah, but she's like, she's iconic. So yes, that is the reporter from Die Hard.
Yeah. And then she gets capped by the elite squadron that moves through this movie on its way to Action Jackson. And the guy that plays the Russian love interest in 6 Feet Under, who's Mary Ellen Trainor's boss, as he's shooting back at this elite squad, I counted how many shots that his pistol held. And it is 22, which is okay. Impossible for a pistol to hold that many bullets.
I mean, this is 1988, man. The guns were doing coke.
At that point, I was like, all right, shift into this is just a popcorn movie, man.
I like how what set you off was the number of bullets in his gun and not the fact that they shoot him with a fire bullet and launch him out a window where his flaming body falls through the ceiling of a restaurant scaring diners.
And then it cuts immediately
to... That's incredible.
That was awesome. And it was a spectacular display of violence that immediately cuts to an opening sequence, music video style opening title, which I have dubbed, That's the Funky Motor City, Baby.
Yep.
Because it's like production lines, people walking through the park, people walking down the street with graffiti on it. And that's also like this like great bass line that's pumping through the fucking stereo. Yeah.
Well, the music is actually by Herbie Hancock and Michael Kamen. And so
Michael
that funk sound. Michael Kamen and Herbie Hancock. You know Herbie Hancock, right?
Yeah.
Do you? Well, Herbie Hancock is a virtuoso musician who's done a lot of great music. And he's gone from, you know, he's done... every genre imaginable. And so, yeah, his funk silence came out in this. But, yeah, that actor you were talking about is Ed O. Ross, who's another, like, he was in Red Heat. He's in Dick Tracy. He's in Lethal Weapon. He's in Universal Soldier. He's, like, one of those dudes who just shows up everywhere and just always looks haggard and, you know, yeah.
I have a couple of, like, three notes I want to rattle off really quick in quick succession the way that I wrote them down. And they are this. Is that the reporter from Die Hard? And then I said, is that the Asian dude from Die Hard? And then I had, is that Argyle from Die Hard? And then I had, is that FBI agent Johnson from Die Hard?
Yes. I don't think that was Argyle.
No, it was.
It was?
Yeah, it was.
No way.
The dude at the valet.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's a mechanic. I don't know. He's some fucking funky fresh dude who's him. She's trying to have a mental battle with like a friendly mental battle with Action Jackson, but Action Jackson is too smart. You know, he'll drive right back at you, man.
He'll do a flip over your car after taunting you to run him over, causing you to ramp off another car into a car store.
We'll get to that scene.
We'll get to that.
The entire cast of Die Hard had a great year because these movies came out the same year.
Yes.
And I was kind of interested to see that, like, if you look at the way that both movies are shot, they're vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, Die Hard is shot more like Lethal Weapon, where it's like very clean. The shots are more artily compiled, I would say. You know, they use a lot more rule of third situation. Whereas, and it's there's a lot of depth in the shot too. Whereas Action Jackson is very much like closer to like the 70s style cop movies, where everything's very flat and brown, and, you know, kind of not as polished as like a Die Hard would, in my opinion.
I would agree, and I would say like this one actually does feel like it has more of a blaxploitation influence. Like there's a famous thing that they do in a lot of blaxploitation movies where it's like, you know, if you wanna have someone hit the ground after falling off a building, rather than paying someone to fall off a building, what you do is you film the ground, you have someone land in front, and then as soon as they hit, you pull the camera back and zoom back, and there's like a lot of like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so this has like sort of that sort of energy where they find the action in camera in these short shots, so there's less by way of establishing shots except for that opening montage to Detroit Funk. But it has that energy that I think it's like Die Hard is a movie that's not actually trying to make a star out of Bruce Willis. Yeah. That came later. You know, Lethal Weapon's not a movie that's like trying to make a star out of Glover or Gibson, Double G. But Action Jackson is shot in a way like you can tell they're really trying to make an action star out of Carl Weathers, because it's shot in a way that it's very cinematic when focusing on him, and then almost dismissive focusing on other stuff because it's his energy at the center of it.
The combination of those
styles is how it's done.
The first time he's introduced is a great example of that.
Because he's not, like,
the way he's introduced takes so long because there's so much preamble with Biff from Back to the Future.
Tom Wilson.
And his partner, who to pick up somebody who stole a purse or, you know, assaulted a woman or then got assaulted by that woman.
Yes.
Which I thought was a great scene.
Yeah.
And then he's in the car and they're like talking up Sergeant Jericho Jackson, who they call Action Jackson, and you know, about how bad he is and about how he beats people and about how he's just a mean-spirited, mean streets kind of guy.
They said something like he was designed by the government to be able to be sent to space without a uniform on. Oh, yeah, they said, like, he was like, I hear his mama and Bigfoot had a baby.
Yeah.
And he's what came out, which, like, is problematic in hindsight. But it's just, like, there's a lot of ham-fisted dialogue like that throughout the whole movie.
And so the kid that they pick up, he's terrified to meet Action Jackson, and there's so much so that when he does, he immediately faints, and like that becomes a bit throughout the movie, which I think they really nail that kid's, I guess you can call it an arc. I don't know.
Yeah.
But by the end of the movie, and like this is when I realized that I love this movie, is like when you realize that Action Jackson, through his adventures in this film, has acquired basically like a ragtag A-team of criminals and bodyguards that are now part of his action team.
They all want to support him. My favorite character is his old partner. Little squirrely white guy with the greasy hair, when he's like, I ought to take you in, Jackson. And then Jackson's like, I need your gun, man. This is the, you know, in the final scene.
Yeah.
And then the guy goes, fuck it.
that was my favorite part, because I like laughed out loud. It was my favorite part. I have many favorite parts, but I laughed out loud at that moment. I was like, classic fucking, like, check that off the bingo box. All right, here's your gun back, you old son of a bitch. Let's go get the bad guy.
it always boils down to, and this actually can probably be said for at least one protagonist in every Joel Silver produced action movie, and that is this phrase: your methods are unconventional, but God damn it, you get the job done. And like, Action Jackson's that guy. His methods are unconventional. Because even at the end, which we'll fast forward to this, just like at the very, very end, when his boss, Bill Duke, another Predator alum, legendary guy, he's actually made some great films too. Bill Duke's just like, I want my report on my desk tomorrow morning. And he's like, what, in the morning? And he's like, yes, in the morning, Lieutenant. Like, you've been promoted back to lieutenant, because even though this is a shit show and everybody's civil rights were stomped on, you got the job done, sir.
My favorite part about that whole sequence is, like, that dude did not leave his office the entire time until the finale of the film.
Hell yeah.
The police commissioner just casually walks onto this crime scene. Like, it's not a bit, like, it's like, all right, commissioners don't do that shit.
Well, I mean, shit got real. Well, they do when they're Bill Duke, because he's one of those faces that you love to see on screen. Now, I just want to make sure I get the name of the movie he directed right, that I saw. It was
Well, I do want to say also that in the opening scene when we first kind of meet him,
Deep Cover. Watch that movie. Larry Fishburne back in the day. It's directed by Bill Duke, the police commissioner in this, and it is phenomenal. Like, one of them movies.
I think I've seen a poster for it. It's coming to my mind.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. But it's one of those movies that, like, I think a lot of people our age probably dismissed. Just like, oh, yeah, it's just another, you know, action movie. And then you watch it, and it's like, oh, that's legit one of the good ones. Like, one of the real good actioners. It's not even action. It's like a mystery cop procedural. It's fucking good. And Lars Fishburne is... He's cowboy Curtis.
I don't know why I'm yawning so hard.
So this movie has like a plot that I think is weirdly, it's absurd, and it's like weirdly complicated for being so basic. Because so what it boils down to is Action Jackson back in the day put a automaker's son in jail for some terrible crime. As we understand it, this automaker's son deserves to be there, but also
he almost ripped his arm out.
Yeah, because of his methods that get the job done, Action Jackson has been busted down to sergeant, and now he's just kind of like a desk jockey.
Yeah,
and now this automaker, played by Coach himself, Craig T. Nelson, he's trying to obtain power in the unions. And in doing so, he's systematically eliminating every other automaker that will potentially stand against his election at the head of the union.
So he can be king of Detroit.
And it's funny, because he even says it at one point. They're like, you don't need any more money. Why do you want this? He's like, it's not money I want. It's power. Ah. And and it's insane. And so now Action Jackson's sucked into it. And he's taking his little junkie prostitute around, who he cures of her heroin addiction in one day using action.
I had this written down at the
end.
It's
crazy.
Was this all just for an anti-drug message? Is that what this movie's about?
Well, because he pulls no punches. He doesn't have the, you know, addiction is a disease mentality at all. He's very much just like, I don't respect you, junkie. And then, like, much later in the
movie, I'm not going to fuck you.
Yeah, I'm not going to fuck you because – and so then he drives real fast instead to give her a new high. And she is later that day, maybe like 15 minutes later, is cured of her addiction. And he's so proud of her that they fuck.
Yeah. And then a song plays at the end credits called – and I have it here. Hang on. Shit. I just lost it.
So the guy who the cinematographer,
it's by the Pointer Sisters.
Oh, the Pointer. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's called He Turned Me Out. So I listened to the song afterwards, and I gotta say, it is about what you think it's about. It's about fucking Action Jackson and him fucking you so hard that you get turned out.
Hey. As
long as you're not on drugs.
He's getting good. He's putting good into the world. His methods, though, they're unconventional, but he gets the job done.
Yeah.
He turns it out.
You'll get turned out.
I do love that when he, I'm going to fuck up the line, but Craig T. Nelson, they meet face to face towards the beginning. And he says to Action Jackson, he's like, what's your name? And he's like, Jericho Jackson, the most badass name that's ever been.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but isn't there like a nickname? Isn't there a nickname that he did? And he's like, what is it? Like, enthusiasm something, but he's like, esprit de corps. And he just looks at him and he's like, action. And then Craig T. Nelson goes, oh, Action Jackson, that rhymes. And you know what? I'm going to say it. No, it does not.
Yes,
action does not rhyme with Jackson.
Yes, it does.
No, action rhymes with traction, but Jackson rhymes with Saxon. There's a difference.
No, it's a certain kind of rhyme.
I'm not into
Eminem it. Eminem utilizes it all the time.
He's allowed to. That's called poetic license. And I think that there's plenty of poetic license in calling the movie Action Jackson because the it flows like that. But that's the poetic license that it grants, that it gets to use it. But you can't be calling attention to it and literally saying it rhymes when it does not.
I can't find it right now, but it does.
Like
it's like a tangential rhyme.
Because it's not direct. Because like I wouldn't say that Dan rhymes with clam, but like it's I wouldn't say that Steven rhymes with heathen. I would say Steven rhymes with even. And I would say that heathen rhymes with. I got nothing on that one.
Breathing.
But I don't know. I'm not an English expert.
Talk about this all the live long day.
So I wanted to point out that. So I think
can I talk about Craig T. Nelson?
Please. I can come back to this note. We can flow.
I have it written down here in my notes. Craig T. Nelson looks like a Muppet. And I think it's because of his
very, very
black caterpillar eyebrows. Make it look like they're an extra piece of felt draped over his forehead. And he looks, and also his jaw often moves as if independent from his body while he talks. And it kind of freaked me out because all I could see was like him having a conversation with like Rizzo the Rat or Gonzo, without, you know, any makeup.
Yeah. He looks almost exactly like Sam Eagle.
Yeah, he could do a good.
Well, think about it. He's the voice of Daddy Incredible in The Incredibles, and the character is certainly Mr. Incredible.
Why do you have to call him Daddy Incredible?
Well, because I just was thinking of him as the dad in the story. I forgot what his superhero name was, and I didn't know if it was
Mr. Incredible or
The Incredible Man.
I just went with
I know they're The Incredibles, Daddy Incredible. It was one of those, like Squirty Boys. It's one of those things. No, but so Mr. Incredible.
I'm known as Daddy Incredible. I'm
known as Craig T. Nelson in some circles. it's reasonable to assume that the visual design of Daddy Incredible was based on Craig T. Nelson to a degree.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I think that's why he's so good in it, is because he is sort of a cartoon, a Muppet. Have you seen Poltergeist?
No, I'm too scared, man.
Oh, no, dude. Poltergeist is like, it's more like, I mean, it's great, but it's more like a wonder movie. It's like an adventure movie. It's very scary, but I think you would like it. And Craig T. Nelson's the dad, and he's got like some screaming monologues in the face of supernatural shit. And it is clutch. He's awesome.
Nice.
You moved the headstones, but you didn't move the bodies. Why? Oh, it's fucking. It's like it's like all time great shit, and it's Craig T. Nelson.
And this might be the only movie I've seen Craig T. Nelson in.
Did you ever watch Coach?
Yeah. I mean, when it was on, it's like syndication.
In the Poltergeist remake, which is actually a lot of fun for what it's worth, Sam Rockwell is the dad, And in his character's arc, he used to be a baseball player. And now I think he's a teacher, but he gets fired or something. And he got fired. He's like, I was laid off. And the mom in the movie, she was like, well, you used to play baseball. Maybe you could be a coach. And that was clearly a nod to Craig T. Nelson, who played Coach and who played the dad in the original Poltergeist. And as the only person in a very crowded theater who got that reference and felt the need to laugh extremely loudly because I assumed other people would get it, that's seared into my brain forever.
Well,
such a good gag. But I was just the one guy.
That's a very niche piece of information to have.
But that's why we had podcasts.
Yeah.
Because you can do that. This movie has two of my favorite things that happen in movies, and sometimes at the same time. Number one is when a stuntman is completely on fire. That's the best special effect ever. There's nothing better than it. A fully on fire stuntman is just the best. The second best thing is, when a dummy is used in place of a human body.
Yeah.
And this movie has multiple instances of both, as well as both together as one.
Yeah.
Like a flaming stuntman gets thrown out of a window, or a word that somebody uses in the movie, one of my favorite words ever, a man who's lit on fire and defenestrated.
Yeah.
Falls to his death, or I mean, he's probably dead before that, I would imagine, but falls to where he is ultimately found. And he is represented both by a flaming stuntman and a dummy in the course of that sequence. And this movie could have been dog shit after that. And I'm already all in because it's the best thing.
Yeah.
The third best thing that a movie can do is have Donnie Yen rev up a punch before hitting somebody. That's number three.
When did that happen?
In like every Donnie Yen movie, he does it in Ip Man multiple times across the series. He did it in John Wick 4 as a reference to his body of work, in which he punches you a bunch of times, then revs you one up and hits you because he's just fucking effortlessly cool.
My favorite effect was at the very end, and it was preceded by one very terrible and one very awesome one liner.
I know exactly what two one liners you're talking about because they have my notes.
Yeah, so, like, Action Jackson sets a trap, but it turns out he was actually the one trapped, and he gets chained up, and they're about to fucking roast him with some kind of automotive line tool, but also just a really menacing flamethrower, apparently. So, they're about to roast this dude when Mr. Ed, the...
I want to throw this out there. This scene is when they do what is expected of Carl Weathers in every role that he has that's not an outright comedy role. He must be the shiniest man alive.
Yeah.
Because it happens in every Rocky movie. 10,000 abs. In Predator. That dude looks so good. He's the when Carl Weathers is shiny, he's the hottest man who's ever lived ever. It's unbelievable.
Terribly aroused.
Unshiny, he's just a normal buff guy. But when he's shined up, and Joel Silver saw that and was like, we will not roll credits on this movie until I can see my reflection in his pectoralis major. And they get it, and
so
it works.
So much baby oil that I slipped out of my chair.
Yep. Oh, yep. Yeah. Actually, that was a diarrhea issue.
You know how, like... on your TV, pixels make up the image.
Yeah, yeah.
That is how abs make up Carl Weathers in this. In this instance.
We ain't talking Philo Farnsworth. We're talking pixels.
Yeah.
He's strapped up. I know exactly what two one-liners you're going to talk about. Do you want me to guess or... do you just want to roll?
I want to deliver him. So
deliver him.
So Mr. Ed, the bouncer from earlier, comes in and saves his ass. I don't know how I'm supposed to get there, but he does.
Well, it's because earlier, which is really funny, because earlier when Action Jackson goes to meet up with, what's her name, Destiny or something?
I don't know.
Goes up to meet up with, let's just call her the whore junkie.
I'll look up her actual character name.
Yeah, look up. Until then, I'm just going to go for a middle ground and call her Junkie Whore. So he goes to pick her up after a show. and her security guard is this big dude who claims to be 270 pounds and is clearly above three. Definitely not 270 pounds. And he'd still be scary then, but he refuses to beat up action. Vanity, that's it.
No wait, and that's the actress's name. Her name and Sydney Ash.
Sydney, that's it. I had almost all the same letters with Destiny. Yeah. I just threw a T in there. He goes he has to get past her security to get in to meet her. And this guy's the security. And he refuses to tangle with Action Jackson because of his Muslim beliefs. He's a man of peace. And, then I guess later he's so protective of Sydney that he kills with impunity on her behalf.
Yep.
For a long time.
So they turn the tables on these dudes, and then Action Jackson turns the flamethrower onto one of them and inexplicably says, chill out, and then blasts the dude who's holding a gas can. He blasts him with a flamethrower, and he just explodes. And I'm like, and I said out loud, I was like, I don't know, man. I think that was the wrong element you're talking about.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of what he should have said.
Then,
but I want to say this about that scene, is that was so indicative of what I think earns this movie, wrongfully, but I think that's what earns this movie a low Rotten Tomatoes score, is that, well, I think there's a lot of instances.
You said chill out, it's unwatchable.
But there's just a lot of instances like that where the dialogue, in an interest of being quippy, ends up being kind of clumsy, but everyone delivers it with aplomb.
Yeah.
And so I think because of that, this movie is regarded as being, you know, like a B movie, like just a second tier movie. Like, oh, this is like a sub Joel Silver production. But I think if you watch it now with the hindsight and with, you know, 40 years of watching Lethal Weapons and shit like that, I think it fares much better. But that line is very indicative of the sort of ham-fistedness of a lot of the dialogue across the course of this movie that might be an issue for some, but yeah. I found it charming. But chill out it's exactly like that would be like, you know, that would be like if you know, if we went the other way with it, if he like froze a guy with a freeze gun, and he's Arnold Schwarzenegger now, froze a guy with a freeze gun and was just like, let me light that for you, you know, like it's the exact opposite of what you are supposed to say. It completely doesn't work. And you know what? If offered to rewrite it, I wouldn't change that line, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Because it kind of takes you out of the moment enough to where you definitely pay attention to everything else he says. And his next line is amazing. Because
he's trying to say, maybe he's trying to say, like, because what they should have done is he should have lit the guy on fire and then said, oh, man, you need to chill out. But then some writer was probably like, well, no, then that guy can't hear him because he's dead. So we need to, and it, you know, like, it got like, that's how I feel
you're
like
just,
it probably happened.
You're justifying.
I think that's probably why they landed on chill out, is because it was supposed to be an after the fact saying, like, whoa, you're getting all heated. You need to chill out. But I don't know. Either I way. Like it where it is because it's just dumb as shit.
And then they go outside, and the dude chasing them has the jankiest prop grenade launcher I've ever seen. We're talking, this thing is like six PVC pipes duct taped together on a vacuum hose is what this thing. You didn't notice that? The prop grenade launcher?
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Because we also think that's just what we think a bazooka looks like.
Yeah, and so they wrestle the grenade launcher away from this dude who earlier, while Action was tied up, said something like, as he's like about to hold the flame to his head, like, we're going to have a barbecue. And so Action Jackson, now with the tides turned and the grenade launcher pointed at this dude, says, a barbecue, huh? How do you like your ribs? And then he shoots him in the ribs with a fucking grenade launcher, and a spectacular fucking dummy explosion, which is great.
It's incredible. But do you remember what happens immediately after that?
No. I was laughing. I was crying tears of laughter.
That's all lead up to the coup de grace. When he explodes, the whole screen is covered in flame, which then transitions into the next scene. And the opening shot of the next scene is a rack of ribs on a grill, a chef flipping them, and then the camera pulls out and we're at a party.
Ah, man, I didn't notice that.
It transitions into actual ribs being cooked.
I think I was writing down the line.
Brilliant.
I gotta go back and watch it again.
Dude, watch that again. It's actually, I took a video of my TV just so I could send the moment to people. I'll just send it to you so you don't have to locate the time thing.
Now, at that party you're talking about, I wrote down that the whitest line that's ever been spoken or written is said by someone at this party. And it's this woman who's wearing like 80 pearls. Walks up to Craig T. Nelson and says, "I'm scandalized. There was no one out front to park our car." And I don't know why I that stuck out to me, but I was like, wow, this is the whitest moment ever caught on film.
Yeah. Because really she should have just been like, no,
and she was like super flustered too. She didn't know what the fuck to do with herself, man. She was fucking scandalized.
She was scandalized. It's like it
because
it takes
Dan,
on the...
there was no one out front to park their car.
But I think that
the sentence gets worse as it goes
on. That line was definitely designed to let us know that this party is hoity-toity. But that's also too, like, that's the blaxploitation energy that I feel like this movie is sort of evocative of, because like, so what the fuck was the movie?
I could
it was
not
called The Zebra
that.
Killer.
I like how serious this woman was. It was great.
There's a line that I saw this at a like a film event. There's a line in this movie. I think it's called The Zebra Killer. And there's two cops that are at the center of it. It's from the 70s. It's like a grindhouse flick. And one of them's white and one of them's black. And the black guy lights up like a what do they call it? Like a cigarillo. And he like lights it up. And then his partner is just like, "Why do you smoke those things? Why don't you just have a cigarette?" And he's like, "I don't smoke cigarettes. They're white." And like that line... Dude, the line kills. It's a great line. Yeah. And it really like brings, and it's, you know, grindhouse aesthetic, and it's like kind of cheesy, but the energy is of just that period comes through in that line. And I think that this movie is trying to be evocative of that in some ways. And that line is very much speaking to a class consciousness that in a more nuanced and in-depth movie would be credited. But here just comes across as silly because she's like, "I'm scandalized."
Yeah. Speaking of like the way this movie is written, my favorite bit that happens a lot in this movie too is like the summation is basically someone says, "Hey, Action Jackson, why are you such a fucking asshole?" And then he's like, "Well, it's probably just my good looks and my smile and like that kind of shit.
Good looks and my charm."
Yeah. And I'm like, what?
But no, he says at one point, he goes, "It must be the clothes."
Yeah. But like he's, because he just came from a scuffle, so his shoot's all fucked up.
Here's a line that is never not wonky by today's standards, where she's like, "Man, you spent all night with me and you didn't even try to lay a hand on me. You must be a queer or a cop." And he was like, "Well, I ain't a queer."
Yeah, I did pause at that one. I was like, man, that's a rough one for 2024.
Yeah, that was a rough one. That's a dated one. But, like, what's funny is there's still a cleverness to it because it's him, you know, it's like if someone just being like, you know, like, I can't think of what I'm trying to think of the
gag. No, but I know you're saying it. Like,
it has the rhythm
of, like.
It's
deduction by deduction, really.
Yes, yeah. You must be this or this. Well, I ain't that. So that's him telling her he's a cop, you know, like that kind of thing. But, yeah, that was
a clever way of exposition without saying it flat out. I'm a police officer. That's why I didn't have sex with you.
There's a streak of light homophobia throughout this movie. I mean, it is a 1988 movie. So that's not a, but, one of the things that I noticed about this movie that I wanted to point out was that the score does some interesting things. In the scene where Craig T. Nelson, kills his wife, played by, Sharon Stone,
which by the way,
Sharon Stone's in this movie.
I have it written down where I was like, I kind of never understood society's obsession with Sharon Stone. Like, she's attractive. She's good. The little work I've seen of her, she's really great in it. But this movie, for some reason, it kind of clicked with me. I was like, okay, Sharon Stone. I get it now.
Yeah, Sharon Stone. Sharon Stone, who, for my money, gave the best performance in Casino.
I haven't seen Casino.
Dude, that is one that we will watch together and record an episode together, because it is it's one of the movies.
I haven't seen Casino really quick?
Yeah.
The buried alive scene I've seen, and it fucked me up so much that I'm like, I don't want to watch that movie.
Yeah, man. There's another scene that gets me worse than that. But man, Sharon Stone in that movie is unbelievable. But so during the scene where he ultimately kills her, before the scene starts, within the score of the music, there's like a dissonant version of the Here Comes the Bride melody. And it's not subtle. And I was like, did I just hear the wedding song? And then as soon as that, like, this dissonant version of it, I was like, oh, he's going to kill Sharon Stone. And then, of course, he did. But then
I wrote down later that scene was really well done because of, like, the reveal of how the gun is no longer in his belt, I thought was actually even I guess for especially a B movie, I was tense. I was scandalized that whole scene.
No, but that's like, again, when I think about the grindhouse and blaxploitation energy from this, one of the best things about watching movies from that era is you see movies that didn't have major success, and movies were different. You know, you would make a movie and then you would just shop it out to theaters to see if you could just get the ground running. So like these minor movies, but you watch them and you go, holy shit, there's great direction happening here. And it's like a dude who went on, maybe made a couple pornos and then, you know, got a job at the post office. Yeah. And but like little pops of direction. And so we'll look up Craig R. Baxley. He's like honestly. But then during perhaps my favorite comedic bit and easily the most insane comedic bit, the score starts invoking gospel music because there's a scene where Action Jackson confronts a couple guys about Papa Doc, a character that he's looking for, which retroactively made me understand a reference in 8 Mile, because I believe Papa Doc was the guy that he had to defeat in rap battles in 8 Mile.
That's where I knew that name. I was like, where have I heard that before?
Yeah. Unless there's another reference being made. I mean, Papa Doc could be it's just something that I don't know of. But to me, to think that 8 Mile was referencing Action Jackson brings me a really incredible amount of joy. What was I just talking about? The score in the scene is when he's going to find out about Papa Doc, and because he asks about Papa Doc, a group of thugs led by Miguel Nunez Jr. of Return of the Living Dead and Joanna Man as the titular character.
He looks like a heftier Rufio.
No, it's the guy who actually has the scissors and is going to cut his balls. Okay. But he's in it, one of the Friday the 13th. He's like another 80s standby. I love the guy. They're going to cut off Action Jackson's balls because for some reason, bad guys in 80s movies, especially those high on the corporate chain, do seem to love to relieve people of their balls. It's a weird thing that happens in a fair amount of movies. But anyway, so he's about to have his balls cut off. But then Sydney kind of busts in and pretends that he starts to do a grift. Like, oh, no, that's my brother, Action Jackson. He's actually he's unwell and he's off his meds.
He's got a metal plate in his head.
He's got a metal plate in his head. That's what it was. And he thinks he's a warrior for God. And so then Carl Weathers is now tasked with doing this pretend improv'd, I'm going to stop you from doing crime because I'm going to save you. And it's fantastic and it's hilarious. And as he's doing it, the score becomes gospel, complete with a chorus singing Amen. Yeah. And it's wild. It's a wild confluence of events. And it's all in service of just like this profoundly silly bit that is then followed by him, once they all buy it, him suddenly firming back up and then roundly beating the fucking shit out of everybody.
And then one guy's trying to leave and he says, hey, brother, I know you're not going to leave without me giving me a amen. And then he flashes yeah. Carl Weathers' smile and then beats his ass, which I wrote down as a select scene. A Steven select.
It was a Steven select. And but yeah, then the score, and like there's a lot of things like that are very heavy-handed in this movie, like the chill out, that I think would feel gaudy in a movie with different energy. But with this energy, it all just works wonders. The one thing that I didn't like that I think actually makes the movie weaker, but I still very much enjoyed, was when he needs to get some information and the crazy man who runs the motel that he knows. Do you remember that guy? The guy who can't talk like this, yeah. Don't tap. He's supposed to be a punch drunk boxer. He just goes, oh, you didn't need to actually go look for Papa Doc at all. That was just for an action scene. Just go down to the barber shop and there's literally a lady there who will just tell you everything.
Yep.
Like, that she'll tell you and by proxy scene. Everyone at home to what's going on. And he goes down there and she's just like, yep, let me just explain what everyone needs to know for the rest of this movie for act three to happen. She's just like a blunt smoking beauty school lady. She's smoking a blunt doing that. And then she says the most unbelievable thing. Cause I would imagine this is a hood barbershop as made famous by movies like Barbershop and Barbershop 2. He's like, thanks for, you know, help me out. I wish I could pay you. I can't pay. And she's like, oh, I'll do anything to help law enforcement. And I'm like, no, the fuck you would not.
Yeah.
There is not a barbershop in any city in the world that is assisting cops without getting paid. And they are correct to be that way. Where is this lady from?
Also, like, Action Jackson, like, he's cool with weed?
I guess so. I mean, he's cool. That's the thing. Action Jackson's cool.
So the other thing about the heroin use with Sydney is like, why'd you get the most menacing looking needle to do heroin with?
Oh yeah.
Like that, like, you know, keep it classy. That thing looks like you're going to fucking, you're putting a dog down.
Well, I think also too, is they don't even really cause it was professionally administered by Craig T. Nelson. I think that
Coach
and the reason it looked like that is in 1988, I think there was a much more abstract version of what inner city drugs looked like. And so American audiences and white American audiences just saw it as drugs. They didn't think of it as heroin. They didn't think of it as crack or anything like that. They just thought of it as drugs. Drugs bad, bad drugs. If you're on drugs, it sucks to get off of them. If you kick them, you've kicked them.
Is it bad that I had that thought? And the other thing I thought also was, man, that you can't just shoot it into your thigh. You didn't even find a vein.
Yeah. Yeah, like I think a lot of people didn't. Because, like, think about, like, did you have the DARE program?
You know what I thought when they brought in that big case of drugs? I was like, wow, look at all those fucking drugs.
Do cops do this many drugs? And we find out as adults, yes. I just remember in DARE, like, it was well-intentioned, but, like, it was essentially just propaganda. And so much so that I came out of DARE with a bias against drugs, but with very little knowledge of what drugs were beyond drugs bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people, it turns out some drugs good, some drugs bad. Some drugs you can do a little of, some drugs you can do more of. You shouldn't always do drugs, and some drugs you shouldn't do because they'll kill you. But when it's just distilled down to drugs bad, it's very simple. And I think that's what's behind the simplistic, portrayal of just drugs in this movie, because I don't think they say heroin. They just say you're a junkie, you get your fix. Oh, I'm coming down.
Oh yeah, you're right. I've been.
They never say heroin. It's just drugs. Like that big needle could have also been a line of anything, could have been a pipe of anything, and it would have played just the same without changing a word of the script, because they just needed drugs. And that's why if she's in the depths of a horrifying heroin addiction, she's still wonderfully hot and a committed, consistent nightclub performer who has every aspect of her life together except for the fact that she's doing some sort of drugs, and then who then kicks them in 6 hours of thrills.
I mean, her result is phenomenal because she's able phenomenal. To just fucking quit cold turkey.
And then she's transferring addictions. She's going to get addicted to Action Jackson. And then he's going to end up with another ex-wife.
He's going to turn her out.
He's going to turn her out. do you
just like the Pointer Sisters prophesized.
Yeah. Oh, I just like that the captain's name was Captain Armbruster.
What?
The captain, the Bill Dukes character, was named Captain Armbruster. On every door said Captain Armbruster.
I was trying to another, read that. Like, I was trying to figure out what the fuck that said.
I don't think I have any other notes. I literally have a note that said someone figured out that Carl Weathers is hot when he's shiny.
Yeah.
Why do bad guys like taking balls? What's the deal with the hotel owner? Chill out, flamethrower? Question mark?
Craig T. Nelson looks like a Muppet. Sharon Stone is hot.
Oh, I wanted to say the DP is John R. Leonetti. So John R. Leonetti just has like an interesting career that when I was looking at it, I wanted to point out. Let me pull it up.
R. Leonetti.
So
is he?
Oh, holy shit! Okay, we're gonna get to John R. Leonetti. I accidentally clicked on the screenwriter Robert Renaud. He also wrote The Hitchhiker. Oh, you know, sorry, not the movie The Hitchhiker. He wrote one episode of a show called The Hitchhiker. But okay, he wrote some Tales from the Crypt episodes, which were very formative to me. But you know what his other big movie was? Demolition Man.
Nice.
Which I think explains everything. Mm. I thought John R. Leonetti had something. So the cinematographer, sorry, Matthew F. Leonetti. It's John R. Leonetti, someone else. But, so the guy who shot this movie has shot some really good things and some really bad things. But, like, he did the Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead. He did Too Fast, Too Furious, Star Trek Insurrection, Species 2, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, Star Trek First Contact. But he also did stuff like Strange Days. He did Angels in the Outfield. What else?
I love that.
Actually, Red Heat, Dragnet, Commando. So definitely like a dude who shot a lot of what the 80s and 90s look like to us. Weird Science. That's pretty phenomenal. Oh, Fast Times. He was the DP for Fast Times. But he also did like Dumb and Dumber 2. Movie 43. Hall Pass. My wife gave me a pass so I can have sex with someone outside of wedlock. I'd actually like to see that. That's probably a funny movie. Who is John R. Leonetti? Who was I thinking of?
Anyway,
I'm pulling it up. Oh no, John R. Leonetti did he like directed Annabelle and was the DP for The Conjuring. Well, there you go. Shall we do our lists?
Yeah.
All right. Do you care if I pee real fast?
No, not at all.
Hey everybody, it's Dan. Just a quick reminder to follow the show at MovieMovieCast on all of the things. Shoot us a message, let us know what you want us to cover. You should also check out our other show, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod on all of the things. Please like and subscribe. It really makes a difference when you do that. Gets us to the top of the list. We get more listeners. We have more opportunities to do fun stuff. And I'm sorry if you can hear the Super Bowl halftime show through my wall right now. My neighbors are clearly watching it. I'm not because I don't actually have a television package. So it goes. And now my cat's trying to eat my jalapeno poppers. Get out of here. Anyway, yeah, follow the show. I love you guys. Thank you so much. So we're back. I peed. And we are going to, in honor of... there we go. Had to rearrange. In honor of the passing of just the wonderful, wonderful man that is and was Carl Weathers. He had so much more to give. We are going to count down some of our favorite athletes that became actors and all that. Or movies.
Well, how about I just rattle off my list, and then we can go through yours.
No, because I think we should just go tit for tat like usual, because it's going to flow either way. Because
okay, all right.
We're just going to do it.
I'm going to go first.
All right, yeah, I got to find my list. Okay, here
number
we go.
Number five athlete turned actor for me, which, by the way, they're not a lot. Not a lot of women have made the jump, by the way.
I mean, it speaks to the general
prejudice
of things.
The only two of note in my mind were Gina Carano and Ronda Rousey, and to be honest with you, I don't think they're very talented actresses, so they're not on this list.
I would agree, but I will say, this is why I think we can go tit for tat, because we will knock this off my list as well. I had... basically, probably in my number three slot, I didn't really order these, was the movie Haywire, which was the one starring Gina Carano that was directed by Steven Soderbergh. And I actually think that that movie is remarkable. And I think that Gina Carano, limitations of her as an actress in place, suits the material really well and is very good in the movie. But it's just like, it's an awesome movie. It's just like such a lean, mean action movie. And, you know, you can discuss your feelings of Gina Carano now, but like at the time, the idea of a woman action star who, because we know she could actually kick all of our asses in real life because she is a professional fighter. It's an action movie that, you know, like in Kill Bill, the fact that Uma Thurman is pretty skinny. I mean, in great shape, but it's just like not a very big woman, or, you know, Uma Thurman's not a professional fighter. So for her to be like cutting all these guys up believably, it's a heightened narrative. She has perfect training and all of this. But to have a super spy that is just like this woman who could actually probably just beat most dudes that I've ever met up soundly without an issue, doing so in the course of an action movie is like kind of groundbreaking. You know, it doesn't heighten it anyway. She's just... like, you know, Bond is more heightened. She just knows how to, and like, she fucks people up using UFC style fighting. It's fucking, have you seen that?
Yeah, a while ago.
You see that? That movie's fucking good. She crushes Fassbender. She crushes Channing Tatum. She like kicks the shit out of like a lot of male Hollywood. It's wild.
I don't think it's time for a rewatch, maybe.
It's damn good. It's damn good.
My number five athlete-turned-actor is Howie Long.
Ooh. Are you a fan of, I can't think of the name. Firestorm?
Do you remember the movie? Firestorm? Yeah, that was good. But do you remember the other movie he's in where he gets kicked out of a helicopter?
No.
Broken Arrow.
Oh, dude, I haven't seen Broken Arrow in ages.
Starring
I forgot.
Christian this Slater v. John Travolta. One of the best movies I've
seen. Oh, yeah. That's an all-time like action classic. I'm more of a face-off guy myself when it comes to that era of Woo.
Yeah.
I might even like what's the Van Damme one where he's got the mullet and he plays a Cajun.
I don't remember.
I'm stoned, so it's escaping me. It's one of my favorite movies, but yeah, okay.
So
we knocked my number three out because we got Haywire out of there. So in my number fives, I put up Mars Attacks, because Mars Attacks stars NFL superstar turned actor, and who actually worked through the blaxploitation era as well and made a lot of very cool stuff, Jim Brown.
Jim Brown almost made my list, yeah.
Yeah, Jim Brown. Known to be an all-around good guy in terms of being charitable and being a people's guy. But, like, he made a lot of really badass movies back in the day that just really capitalized on the fact that he's, like, just a big black man who can kick some ass.
Yeah.
And, like, he's that fucking rules.
Mars Attacks.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and I think we even did an episode on The Running Man, but like he's Sub-Zero in The Running Man. Is he Sub-Zero? I forget. But I want to do Mars Attacks because that's a movie that I just have a love for. Yeah.
It's the only Tim Burton movie that I like.
Dude, in you don't like Pee-wee's Big Adventure? Ed Wood?
We talk about this every time I bring up Mars Attacks is the only Tim Burton movie.
I'm like, really?
And then you say, you don't like Pee-wee's Adventure? And I say, no, but I did. I will give you Sleepy Hollow. And you say, oh, Sleepy Hollow fucking rules. And then, yeah. I don't know why you turned into Tim from Castle Rocks, but.
No, but that was actually spot on. But I was going to say in The Running Man, I believe he played Sub-Zero. It's been a while since I've seen that. But one of my favorite one-liners that Arnold Schwarzenegger delivers, it's much better than what Action Jackson put forward. He kills Sub-Zero and he goes, now, Plane Zero.
Oh wait, that was one other. That was one other note that I had about the movie Action Jackson. Yeah. I wrote down a guy named Della Plane who makes cars. Yeah, right.
Dude, I like the ad campaign though. His car, the Haley.
Yeah,
it only comes around once every couple years.
Yeah,
I mean, it's fun stuff. All right, what do you got?
My number four is Rowdy Roddy Piper because he plays the maniac in Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and that is probably like top tier C-level character in that show.
Oh yeah,
top tier recurring character in that show is the maniac because he just shows up, and every time he does, it's absolute chaos. And Roddy Piper does such a good job of playing essentially himself, just turned up to like 15. With the psychoticness of being an ex-wrestler and things like that.
He has what might be the best line in the whole show. At least sets off the best exchange when he says, you know, you boys remind me of my kids. They're like, oh, Maniac, you got kids? Not anymore.
No.
And then he leaves. But he really sells it because he has like that pensive moment because he's doing an exaggerated version of himself, but he's also doing Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler.
Yeah, exactly.
And he has a real moment of like thinking about his kids. He's like, nah, not anymore. And then the gang is like, did he kill his kids? Is that what he's trying to say? But he's also the star of They Live, which is one of the, you would love They Live.
Yeah. I've seen the important clips.
Yeah, you know the fight.
Yeah.
Him and Keith David put on the damn glasses. Yeah, Rowdy Roddy Piper, I didn't even think of him, and he's actually the best answer.
Yeah. Well, I have a few more that are pretty good.
Okay. So even though he was only in it for a little bit, I wanted to shout him out because I think of every wrestler over the history of time that has tried to make the switch into acting. I think the best actual actor of all of them is Dave Bautista.
Yeah,
and I think that one of the Blade Runner 2049 is the movie I picked because he's only in it for a little bit of time, but like in a movie of giant swings and visual flourishes, when I think about that movie, the first image that comes to my head is his wrinkly head and those tiny little glasses. It's a scene that has tremendous gravitas, and he's what brings it to that scene, especially because he's acting opposite Gosling, who's very understated in that movie. And it's, it's just.
Yeah, same. I don't remember a lot of that film because, boy, it moved very, very slowly. But that particular scene, it was half an hour maybe?
I wouldn't even give it that much. It's not much at all.
Like 12 minutes. But either way, the most important part of that movie is that scene for me, for sure.
For sure. I mean, it sets up the whole movie. But it's just like, of all the images that pop in my head when someone says Blade Runner 2049, the fact that it's one of the more plain images in terms of what's happening, it's a very gray, like, you know, washed out, not heightened scene, and it's just Dave Bautista acting. The Rock might be the biggest star, and John Cena might be working his way, you know, hanging off of The Rock's coattails, and they're both talented guys who I enjoy, but Bautista, like, they're all superstars, but Bautista, like, he's an actor.
Yeah.
He's acting, and I really respect that about him. Get down.
I'm trying to watch you, Matt, behind you. I was, I didn't want to say anything because I wanted to let nature take its course.
Doris has never been a cat that knocks things off of shelves the way cats in internet videos do. But in my new setup here, my earplug case is up here, and she wants to knock it off so badly. And it's the only thing she's ever been like that about.
What are you doing, Stinky?
All right, anyway, she's a tremendous athlete. I'm just going to let it happen. We're like the dollop now. She's the Jose.
Nice.
Oh, look at those eyes.
Oh my God, yeah.
What are you doing, you little fucker?
We can play after this, I promise.
Oh, I'm such a slut for my cat.
My number three is John David Washington.
He was an athlete?
Who was a wide receiver for the Los Angeles Rams. I don't think he played, but he was on like the practice squad, yeah. He was he was also in a I think he was in the Canadian Football League as well. I should have probably had this up as I was talking about it.
Can you get off the shelf, Stinky? Over here.
Oh, actually he was on the St. Louis Rams.
Okay, what's that?
In 2006. That was before they moved to Los Angeles, so.
Oh, okay. I was like, was that Denzel Washington's personal football team?
No, okay, so he played college football at Morehouse College and then signed with the St. Louis Rams, undrafted free agent. So he was not very good at football, by football standards. I'm sure he's better than everybody that we've ever met in person at football.
I mean, he fucked that dude up with a cheese grater in Tenet.
Yeah.
Did you see The Creator?
No.
I liked it a lot.
I don't know why I said it like that, but I really want to.
I think you would like it a lot, but he's really great in it. Even if you don't end up liking the content of the movie, it's a really beautiful movie that was shot relatively cheap. It's worth checking out.
Was that Gareth
Edwards? No, I always forget which Gareth it is. It's either Edwards or Ed Evans.
Gareth Edwards.
Edwards. Yeah, the guy who did Rogue One.
He did Rogue One.
Yeah.
And Monsters and Godzilla and The Last Jedi. Okay.
Yeah. But I think that The Creator is like his most visually stunning out of all of those. All right. So I did my five. I did my four. I already did my three, which was Haywire.
Hit me with the two. Hit me with the two slot.
Are you familiar with Fred Williamson?
No.
Fred Williamson is former athlete, football player, who, again, got into the world of grindhouse movies and blaxploitation films. He is in a lot of movies from the 70s that I've seen that I enjoy that I actually can't say the titles out loud because, like, one of them is called Boss N-Word. And, but it's, you know, it's, but like, that's the, you know, that's the thing of it. And, so there's a lot of stuff like that, but he's in like Hell Up in Harlem, which rules. He's one of those guys. And, he was in the, has nothing to do with the new Inglourious Basterds, except, Tarantino just took the title, but the movie original, like, it's not a remake or anything, but the original, there's a movie called Inglourious Basterds that stars Fred Williamson. But, people of our generation will, remember him from his role in From Dusk Till Dawn. A movie that I really love, and he's one of the bar patrons that ultimately does become a vampire. But before that, before becoming the gnarliest, most crazy out, makeuped out vampire, gives a great performance as a cigar chomping badass who, he takes a lot of those vampies out with him. So, but yeah, Fred Williamson is awesome. And,
I recognize this dude.
You recognize him. He was in like VFW recently where they dial into that a little bit. Fred Williamson rules, and From Dusk Till Dawn is just the best. I love that movie.
He looks like a G.I. Joe.
And that's a lot of times what he had played back in the day was like, you know, a very sturdy that guy character. But he's also like, he's one of those guys that, he never became a superstar, but when you watch those old movies, you go, oh, he's doing more than just being cool. He's actually a good actor.
My number
just say O.J. Simpson, get it out of the way.
No, my number two is the why he would be the opposite of O.J. Simpson.
His name is
Jason Statham.
Their names are sort of opposite.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, you know, size, different styles of football. You know, you can make a correlate. Yeah. Jason Statham is number two. I mean, what? There's not really a lot to say. He used to be a footballer, And now we play. And now he plays a man who sounds like an angry Michael Caine.
He's Beekeeper. Well, he was which actually I watched The Beekeeper for the second time this weekend because my dad wanted to see it. And I was like, I'll watch that again. Let's fucking go. And it's so much fun. But
Jason Statham is just doing an angry Michael Caine and then adding Janelle Maine after it.
Janelle Maine. He's it's funny, he barely says a word in Beekeeper. The movie just tells what's happening while he kicks his way through it. And he was also on the British national diving team.
On the diving team, I was.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I kind of want
to leap up off the diving board, put my head down, and try to land in with as little splash as possible.
You know what I
mean? I'm Jason Statham.
He's the new, like, Schwarzenegger in that anyone can do the impression because we've all figured out what his thing is.
Yeah.
Did you see Spy?
No.
I haven't seen the whole movie, but Jason Statham plays like the good, like a really good spy in that movie. But he like gives this monologue where he's like, where like he talks about like, you know, like it starts with him kicking all these asses, like, and I'll kick this guy, and then I'll beat this man to death with my own arm, sewed my arm back on, and like he goes through like a whole thing. I can't do it justice, and I don't remember the actual bit, but it's very clever. I've heard that movie's actually good. I'd like to see it. My number one athlete turned actor is also my number one athlete turned actor movie. There's already been an episode devoted to this in the past, but my love for the two entities I'm about to name is no secret to anybody. Of course I'm talking about the, former Mr. Universe, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh my God. Two-time
Mr. Universe. And I'm talking about True Lies, his best movie, James Cameron's
really
best movie.
I really thought you were going to say Terminator because
no.
Shut the fuck up about Terminator in the last 2 weeks. This is a twist to me. And a very welcome one.
Well, with Terminator, you see. the thing is, the Terminator is you got to talk about it because there's fucking five of them. And it's a lot of mythology. And so that's all I was thinking about all week while trying to just distract myself from life. This one's your fault. But True Lies. Supposed to have a sequel. Never did. Never manifested. It's still struggling to get a physical release, although I think there's a 4K coming this year at some point. Could be, but
yeah.
It's one of those movies that I'm actually glad it all worked out the way it did because it stands alone. It's an incredible action movie. It's an incredibly funny comedy. And it is everything about why Schwarzenegger is the behemoth entertainment force that he is. It's the first movie to kind of like tap into literally all of his charms. Everything that he was capable of doing was done in this movie through the comedy chops, through the leading man status stuff, through the, you know, actually having to act at certain points while also delivering on what we all expect from your classic Schwarzenegger picture. Iconic Jamie Lee Curtis performance, coked out Tom Arnold performance, an amazing supporting performance from the late great Bill Paxton. And it's just one of those movies that never stops being entertaining, and it has such like a lark energy to it that it doesn't matter that, like, you know, there's certain things in it that are dated, you know, just like socially and things like that. Because it's all just so like purposefully harmless and just like a hard hitting movie that's ultimately light as a feather. And that's Schwarzenegger, baby. He's that big scary guy who can kick your ass, and he's also the funny guy from Twins. You know, it's everything. Yeah. He's here to entertain us, and that's what we're gonna do. So yeah, True Lies is my number one of that.
I've never been attracted to Jamie Lee Curtis except for in that movie.
That was a formative scene for a lot of us.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
My number one athlete turned actor is someone who everything he's in, he's been the best part of. And I think that he does that by design because he really enjoys what he does. And when he's not enjoying it, he doesn't want to do it. And that is Terry Crews.
Yes. I thought a lot about putting him on, but the only movie I could think of is White Chicks.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's like the greatest movie. It's funny. It's not the
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is some of the best storytelling and acting that he's ever been a part of. And it's just, you know, if you like, just look up clips online. He is both the funniest person or the most, like, you know, heartfelt person or the, you know, caring person in the room, in every scene that he's in. He can play the straight man. He can play the ridiculous person. He has so much range. It's wild. And he's just, and I follow him on Instagram. He's a man of the people. He learned how to build a gaming PC so that he could play video games with his son and like connect with him that way. All around wholesome dude. I don't watch America's Got Talent, but the clips that I have seen, he seems to really enjoy hosting it. And, you know, when he just like vibrates positive energy everywhere he is. And I really enjoy people like that.
He's like truly one of those guys who's just like born to be a superstar. And I think it's on the back of his relentless positivity. Anytime he shows up in something, even if it's something you don't like, it's just better on account of, you know, of course, because he's always crushing it, but also on account of knowing that he's enjoying doing it.
Yeah.
Like
Balls of Fury, by the way, was my first introduction to an actor.
He was one, I mean, I think it was the powerful combo of, because he popped up at, like in some of those early Apatowian comedies, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't know that, but like, I think it was.
Expendables also?
He was Expendables, but like for me, it was like White Chicks is where he popped up. And when he was the face of Old Spice deodorant for a while, those were great.
So that was like, I work in a marketing adjacent field, and there's like kind of like an overall like, man, it would have been cool to like be in the ad and meetings like the 90s where like Pepsi and Coke were going at it and McDonald's was there.
Yeah.
Cool, right? And then like in the early aughts, like Old Spice kind of brought that feeling back of like advertising might be cool again, where it's like they're doing fun.
I would say helped by Geico as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And now it's just now we're back down in the cycle of like I hate everything that's being advertised to me.
Yeah. There's like not a lot of art to it's all algorithmically predicted. The what was his name in Idiocracy? President Camacho
or something like
Mountain
that.
Dew Camacho. And he's great in that movie. He's so funny in that movie. Yeah, and the thing is with Terry Crews as well is he didn't actually necessarily start as an athlete because apparently he was into, I don't want to say loftier pursuits, athletes as lofty as anything, but softer pursuits, I'll say. You know, he was a painter, a poet, a scholarly man who was into the educational field of things.
Blessed and then everyone's like, body of an Adonis.
Exactly. And so, like, you know, for me, it's like, you know, for one of us, it'd be like, oh, I wanted to be a football player, but I, you know, it made more sense for me to go into this field. He was like, I wanted to be a tremendous artist, but it made more sense to me to just go to the NFL because, like, why not be a football player when you are built like that and you're clearly athletic and talented? You can make a lot of money. And then he ultimately built his way into being the Renaissance man artiste that he intended to be. What a great story. Love that guy.
He's got a lot of meat pixels.
Yes, he does indeed. Meat pixels. It's like that's like a modern digital Meat Puppets cover band, the Meat Pixels.
Yeah, the Meat Pixels. They play robot music.
Have you seen Gamer?
Love that movie.
Terry Crews is one of the villains in it, and he's terrifying.
Yeah.
He's terrifying. When he sings, I've got no strings to hold me down. Oh, he's so scary when he's threatening Jerry Butts.
Yeah, what a great movie.
All at the behest of Dexter Morgan. I'm on to you, Morgan.
All right, let's end it.
Yeah, let's do it. RIP Carl hours. Weathers. Yeah. Hey, Carl Weathers deserves all the hours we've
Carl
had.
Weathers deserves.
RIP, man. Thanks for your wonderful body of work and for, by all accounts, being just a wonderful person. We're all richer for having had you in our lives.
You had a great opportunity there, Dan, to say thanks for your wonderful body of work and your wonderful body.
And your wonderful shiny body.
Yeah.
Slick with sweat, baby oil, and reflecting the lights of the stadium as you stand fists in the air versus Rocky, versus Sylvester Stallone, all in the name of making everybody out there, faces that are nobody to you, no names, all just to make us happy. And I thank you for it, sir.
Heaven is a little brighter today because of the That's baby right. oil that adorns his chest.
We've only just begun to live white lace and promises. A kiss for luck, and I'm on my way. Go to your happy place. Happy. All right, well, yeah, so I've been cutting a commercial into the middle where I give all the socials, so we don't even really need to do it, but we'll say it anyway, at Movie Movie Cast on all the things. You can check out my website, scullyvision.com. We got Hot Property at Hot Property Pod. Like, subscribe, yeah. share. And give your loved ones a little smooch. Say yeah. it's from us. They'll appreciate it.
And a ball tap.
And got a ball. You gotta take their balls to let them know that yeah. you're an 80s bad guy villain. Yeah, the only thing this movie didn't have was Xander Berkeley.
Yeah.
You'd know him if you saw him.
All right, well, we love you.
We love you. Now, are we going to do That's Been Movie Movie Bye, or are we doing the one that you said before, we'll see you at the movies? We were going to do that, and then it faded away.
We can do that. I like we'll see you at the movies.
Okay.
It's better than fuck yourself, which is what we did last time.
I've done that one a few times.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's been I Like to Movie Movie, and we'll see you
at the movies.
At the movies.